You're listening to WCOM FM LP 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your community radio station. The comments, views, and opinions of this program do not necessarily represent the views of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. Hello and welcome to Focus on Business and the Diversity and Inclusion Business Series. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, it's the second in the Diversity and Inclusion in Business Series, I want to talk about where diversity and inclusion starts. And I want to frame this up as a solution for business. And to quote the author of the book, Diversity and Inclusion Handbook, Sandra Thiederman, she starts her book with, "Diversity is not an imposition, it's an advantage. Inclusion is not a problem, it's a solution. Working together is more than a good idea, it's essential to individual and organizational success." So where does diversity and inclusion truly begin? Well, it starts with us. It starts with you and it starts with me as individuals and our ability to develop self-awareness and the ability to self-assess. Lao Tzu quotes, I'm going to quote him, and he says, and he's an ancient sage, I guess you would say, in China, "Knowing others is wisdom, knowing yourself is enlightenment." And that enlightenment has to start with taking sometimes some pretty difficult steps in assessing who we are, what we believe, what we value, and our past and our current perspectives on things. All of our backgrounds are different. They're unique. Our experiences are different. And our experiences are our experiences. Our perceptions are our perceptions. And as some say, perception is reality, because our perceptions are what we interact with. And with our experiences, we can build up baggage. We can build up those experiences. And as his human nature, we have the tendency to generalize or extrapolate past experiences onto other people that we see as similar. And those may be surface, visible similarities. And those generalizations, while giving us a perspective and a framework for dealing with life, do not necessarily do us a service or a favor when it comes to self-awareness and to giving everyone an equitable opportunity and building equity and treating everyone fairly and those kind of things. And there are a lot of generalizations that we can look at that we would like, or in the old days we would say we wanted to be our entire self at work. But there were parts of ourselves that we did not discuss at work. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. We weren't brought up to discuss religion, politics, or sex in the workplace. Those were personal things. They did inform us. They did make us part of the equation of who we are. But those were not things that were discussed in the workplace. And from my perspective, I don't think that's a bad framework to have in your workplace, because those are very disruptive, divisive things that come with them, overgeneralizations, assumptions as to behaviors and what a person who follows or is a voter for one party or the other, or holds one religious belief versus another. And so those prejudices can lead to discrimination because of those overgeneralizations. We can't judge a book by its cover. We can't judge the contents of a book because the covers look similar or have a similar title. And so our self-awareness and how we frame up our interactions, how we frame up our expectations of how somebody's going to conduct themselves based on a limited perspective of how we see them, or how we define that person based on that limited knowledge we have, leads to discrimination, leads to conflict. And that isn't good for business. It's not good for us personally either. It's not good for our country. And so when we're talking about diversity, inclusion, equity, belonging, we want to start with a self-awareness of what baggage, what definitions, what perceptions, what experiences are coming in to inform our behavior and our perception of other people's behaviors. So again, Lao Tzu says, knowing others is wisdom, knowing ourselves is enlightenment, and we're seeking that enlightenment. So we, as leaders of our organizations, as leaders in our communities, as team members in our communities, our organizations, in our families, we need to understand clearly our own life experiences. We need to understand our perceptions, how those perceptions may not be valid. We may have them, and they're valid from the standpoint that they're ours, but our perceptions may not truly reflect the conversation, the actions, the intent of the person we're perceiving or the situation we're perceiving. And so we really need to be aware of that and in assessing ourselves. We need to look at our communication style. I'm an extrovert. I solve problems externally. I like to talk through things in a lot of ways. I'm also an introvert in others, in that I like to keep some part of my thought process, my, I call it intellectual property or method of solving things to myself. And so there's those differences as to when and how I communicate may send out different signals to other people. My word choice, my accent, all of those things inform people. I've said before on the show, I was born and raised in West Virginia, and have lived in 10 states before I arrived in North Carolina. And when I arrived in North Carolina, as a as someone here locally pointed out, as a Yankee with a Southern accent, there was a perception. I remember talking to one business person, had just met them, and when they found out I was from West Virginia, they said, "Well, you don't sound like you're from West Virginia." And I'm like, "What does a person from West Virginia sound like?" There's a perception of what we'll sound like. There's a perception of our background. There's a lot of prejudices associated with people from West Virginia. The same can be said true of Louisiana, Mississippi, parts of North Carolina. So it's those perceptions, that baggage. That person saying that to me was offensive, because you could tell there was baggage in her perception as to what that actually meant. So it's communication styles, it's language skills, it's presumptions about those that other people may have about that. It's about our values. It's about our attitudes, our beliefs, and our feelings, and yes, our biases. And so our awareness, our ability to truly, honestly take a look at ourselves and be able to say this could potentially be an issue. Word choice. Ethnic background, where somebody's country of origin is, and how those stylistic things come into being. And assumptions, people's language skills can be revealed in trying to be, I don't know if the term, actual right, the correct term is woke, but being gender neutral, of trying to eliminate masculine and feminine from the course of language today, and replacing words that have a point of origin from another language that contain the word men, and thinking you can simply substitute women in for men, or that you need to somehow make that completely gender neutral, when the letters men or man or woman and women embedded in a word isn't necessarily giving it a gender aspect of it, but it simply means something else in a word origin. Speaking with Spanish, Latino background, the word for black, negro, that has a different context. Speaking it in English as negro, and the evolution of those types of words in our language, and understanding the etymology of words, and when a word is being used from another language in the context of an English speaker. Some languages have built into them for pens and pencils, masculine and feminine. A book is masculine in Spanish. El libro, a pen, la pez, is feminine. And so we need to be aware that while we think we're eliminating gender biases, things that words have origins, and that masculine and feminine. Some countries, the son and the daughter appear to have a different last name because the feminine version of the family name gets an A added to the end, those kind of things. And so it's not universally translatable that when we're attempting through our framework, through our skill sets, through our desire to make things more equal, we may actually complicate and exacerbate a situation because we don't have full understanding and full utilization of language skills that extend beyond the obvious of something being men versus women. That's not it. Men being a Hebrew word. And that men in it is not about masculine or feminine. It's an etymology of the word from a foreign language. And so our awareness needs to extend to improving and broadening our experiences so that we are more informed. We are more able to communicate and be receptive to different styles of communication and different perspectives of communication. And so we have a large degree, and it's natural, of ethnocentrism. We use our own values to interpret behaviors, intentions, and needs. And that comes from where we're born, not just being on the continent of North America, in the United States, born in a specific state, a specific region, a specific town, at a specific time. Those things come into play. We can only interpret things in the framework of the knowledge and the experiences we have. And so broadening our experiences, knowing people that are outside that ethnocentric framework of where we come from and where we were born and in the time frame we were born, is important. Reading beyond your comfort level and looking at other cultures. I remember growing up in West Virginia, cable, long before cable was out in the country where I was at, we had a satellite dish antenna. And our experience got informed beyond the three, ABC, NBC, and I guess we had PBS too. But we had four channels, and we went from four channels to hundreds of channels from Canada, from the Caribbean, and we had the BBC. We had Spanish language channels. We had French language channels, which was very enriching. My brother was studying French. He ultimately took 5 years of French and was incredibly gifted in picking up languages. I studied 5 years of Spanish. And so having that access to other perspectives, having news coming in and being framing the events of today from other perspectives, I still love to do that in watching news on the TV. If I can pick up a news channel from any from Britain, from Israel, from Canada, and be informed from the perspective of how the stories that are happening here, even a different time zone can have a very different perspective on how connected you are, East Coast to West Coast, the coasts versus the inside of the United States, the flyover areas, some people refer to it. Those kind of things inform our experiences, and the more exposure we can get, agree with them or not, but the more we can understand where somebody else is coming from, it challenges us to take in the information in our framework and our perspective and consider it from a different viewpoint because we are informed. So if you value, let's say you value achievement and education and philanthropy, then your view of people who don't share those values is significantly different than your view of people who do share those values. And so your criteria, your expectation of behavior becomes informed by your experiences, your values, and how people are engaging you and their communication style, their word choices. So it really does, and I'm going to somewhat deliberately use this phrase, a Michael Jackson song, The Man in the Mirror. You're asking somebody to change, and that change begins with you, the man or woman in the mirror. And so, again, getting back to knowing yourself gives you an enlightenment and gives you the ability to explore who you are, what you believe, how you communicate, your styles, what motivates you, and how are you framing out and your expectations of how a relationship, whether that's just a casual and passing business relationship, somebody at a networking event, somebody you might encounter on a Zoom meeting, it might be a client, and maybe your client has a very diverse workforce and you're interacting with them. The broader your experiences, directly or through learning and education, the better chance you have of having successful relationships across the diversity and being able to include and really value those differences and respect them. But again, that respect does not have to mean you're agreeing with the other person's perspective. It just means you have to understand it, you're going to acknowledge it, and just like communication, it's a two-way street. The person sending the message and the person receiving the message have to find the common ground in order to come together and have successful communication. And that's what diversity and inclusion equity is about, is successfully being able to bring our entire authentic selves into conversations, into the workplace, to enrich the experience, to inform decisions by having different perspectives and different experiences that will more broadly reflect potential customer base, potential stakeholders in the community. And the more diversity, truly true diversity and acceptance and acknowledgement that we may have different experiences, we may have different backgrounds and perspectives on something, one is not more valid than the other. They're different, and we are entitled to those differences. And if we ask someone to just sit down and shut up or act some different way, to be politically correct, then we are saying they're not entitled, they're not able to bring their authentic self into the workplace, and that is the ultimate discrimination. Sit down and shut up is not positive communication. It's not embracing diversity, and it's invalidating the other person's life experiences, and you can hardly expect them to validate yours if you're not willing to validate and accept their perspectives. You don't have to agree, but you do have to give everyone the acknowledgement, the acceptance that they're entitled to their voice, their opinion, their perspectives, their values, whether you agree with them or not. That's the great part of the United States, is we have been a melting pot for generations. Has it been a perfect melting pot? No, because and has it had issues? Yes. But when we come together, when you have let's think of it as the melting pot comes together and we're forming the rich flavor of our country and having the best of what each of us is and our backgrounds and the people who have immigrated here and bringing the best. And I will argue that diversity, that inclusion, as flawed as it is with us being humans and not being able to perfectly handle those differences at all times, that there are people who just are not capable of not discriminating and having biases and prejudices. It has been that rich experience of blending in cultures, of blending in experiences, and bringing that in that has made America the greatest country on earth, from my perspective, on how things happen. Somehow we're getting becoming to equating diversity and inclusion and belonging and equity into something that they have never been. We're asking people to be politically correct, to keep their mouth shut, to be afraid to speak, and to march along in lockstep when that is not to our advantage. We're asking everyone to think the same way, to not voice a different opinion or have a different perspective. And that is not the ultimate in diversity and inclusion and equity and in belonging. We are excluding large parts of our organizations, our communities, from being participatory and arriving at solutions because of the antagonism, the denial of one side or the other to be entitled to their experiences and their choices and to practice their religion, their faith, to embrace their cultures and bring them into the workplace and say, no, that's not acceptable. Anytime we're saying a behavior short of violence and those kind of things and breaking the law is not acceptable, then so it is constraining us as a whole because it is making us a them and a we versus a true united, diverse group. And so as business owners, especially as small business owners, our personal, our professional, our financial interests intersect with our business and how things are successfully navigated in that diversity, in the inclusion, and it impacts the bottom line. In a lot of ways, our values translate into the culture of our businesses and to the bottom line ultimately. And that means we have to be authentic in our approach to people coming into the workplace, part of our team, part of our organization. Who we are, what we do, who we serve needs to be clear. It needs to be valued. It needs to encompass all that complexity of the diversity in our experiences. And it has to be in the DNA of our business. Frequently in small businesses, we get into that ethnocentrism, the haloing effect. We hire people who look and sound like us, who we're comfortable with. And we have to challenge ourselves as small business owners to hire the people who are best qualified. And this is true of any size organization, but especially, I'm going to say, in a small business, the best qualified person, regardless of how comfortable we are with their different experiences, their different voice, even their different appearances. So we can ask people to show up in a professional dress, but we define that as in a non-discriminatory way. We have to take other factors into consideration, and we put safety. We put the objectives of being the best authentic selves at work for our workforce and developing a culture and a values in the organization that everyone can accept and buy into and still be their authentic self. So people need to seek out experiences. You do, I do, everyone does. That's going to enable them to interact with people who are not just like them. You're going to engaging in transactions in your business. You're buying and you're selling. And so an authentic commitment to serving everyone is important. And what is that? That means someone walks into your retail store, or someone comes into your law office or your accounting firm, or and they're asking for service, we serve them. And we serve them equally to the best of our ability, with respect, with dignity, and taking into consideration their full authentic self. Now, if I'm an artist, and we can define that broadly or narrowly, but if I'm an artist, I still get to keep my values. But I don't necessarily have to practice my art and take on every customer. So I liken it to, I like to paint as a hobby, and I cannot paint every scenery from the same perspective. I cannot paint a pet portrait or a person's portrait without a sense of connection. Otherwise, it becomes two-dimensional. And yes, a painting is two-dimensional, but we want it to look three-dimensional. And there is an aspect to that creativity, to creating a piece of art, whether that's a painting, a book, a graphic, a cake, a wedding invitation, any of those things that asks us to put our artistry, our creativity into a product. When we're asked to be an inauthentic self, when we ask to do something that's against our values, then that becomes an issue too, because we're not allowing to be able to say, yes, I can create that, or no, I can't create that, because it's just not in me to create a piece of art for whatever purpose, for sale, on a commission, however you want to frame it, when I am not fully engaged in it. And you can see the difference between a flat two-dimensional painting and a fully authentic, engaged two-dimensional painting, because there's a depth to it that gives that 3D effect, that ability to know that that was a living animal or the person that you were connected with that you were painting. It's just not in me as an artist to give life to a piece of work. I can make it, but it's flat. It's not the living and breathing creative thing that I would have made if I were fully engaged in having choices and in the way I want to create my art. So it's like, we have to think about that, and when we're bringing people into the workplace, to be really aware that our authentic self, our complete self, has to show up, but we don't necessarily have to share every aspect of our self within those organizations and at the workplace. And I argue that politics, religion, and sex do not belong in the workplace as discussion points. So how do we, as small business owners, look at the bottom line to shift our focus to sustainability and that includes diversity and inclusion? How do we justify it? How do we measure it? How do we enable the different voices and views to come in to our organizations, to still be productive, to give different perspectives, to inform our decisions? And it is a conscious decision. We're recruiting and retaining vendors, contractors, employees, investors, people that, you know, our customers, and to have the broadest potential for connecting with more people, it requires us to be comfortable at a level to be able to engage with them without a stiltedness to that, to a discomfort to that. And it's discomfort from unfamiliarity, but a discomfort that comes a lot of times when I have conversations with people about recruiting and things. It's like, I'm just not comfortable with, you know, younger people. I'm not comfortable with somebody over the age of 60. I'm not comfortable with people not born in this country or that don't, you know, that English is not their first language. I worked with a financial advisor who was not comfortable with women clients. And so it's a lack of familiarity, a lack of an ability to communicate. There's something there. And so we have to be aware of what that is and ask ourselves bluntly and be honest with ourselves and, if necessary, with people who can coach us and help develop skill sets, help us become less awkward in dealing with people who are not just like us. And learn, when is it appropriate to ask, how do you refer to yourself? That can be as easy as, you know, we see if you go on LinkedIn or other places where people are indicating that they identify as he and him or she and her. Somebody might put down they identify, you know, as black or brown or African American or Asian American. And so there's different descriptors of what someone wants to claim as their identity. And so that can be very uncomfortable for people who have not been raised with those perspectives or even those questions. And that's not just here in the United States, but throughout the world. You can have conversations with, like, you know, someone asks me, why does that say he, him, or she, her? And then we have a different conversation because the perspectives on this are very different country to country. I have a friend I was talking with about scientists, and we're talking about in China, a woman scientist is on equal par with a male scientist, where other countries, not so much. And so as businesses, whether we're corporations, we're nonprofits, we're small businesses, we're, you know, virtual, we're brick and mortar, all the different things that we can use to define our businesses, we have to think about how we are perceived by the people who would buy from us. What is our brand? What is our voice? What do we want to stand for in our values? And that definition should reflect not just our perspective as the owner of the business, although that will inform it probably to the greatest degree, but as our businesses grow and more people become stakeholders as employees, vendors, collaborators, bankers, you know, funders, all of those different elements of being in business, the broader our access to opinions, to approaches, to perspectives, the better our innovation and our ability to sustain our business is going to be, because it gives us more options. It gives us the ability to define and identify with more people. And so when we're in building a case for our businesses for diversity and inclusion, we need a strategic plan. We need to understand how to address issues in our organization. It may be that we need to talk about the reasons for change, to seek out proposals for how we can change and how we can grow, and take a multidimensional perspective and approach to addressing diversity, to addressing inclusion. I'm not saying go out and fire all the employees that you have, but consciously make a decision as employees are transitioning out through retirement, through job changes, through whatever transitioning point life changes in your business and in your employees and vendors' lives. Take the opportunity to look around and look not just skin deep at our color of our skin, but countries of origin, different perspectives, genders. All of those kind of things should inform how do we enrich our businesses to have a broader experience. And we start always with ourselves and saying, what are my patterns of behavior when I'm recruiting employees, when I'm looking for a vendor, when I'm building my network? And then when I started my business nearly 20 years ago, I would go to certain entrepreneurship events and I would look around and I'd say there's 800 people in the room. Maybe 10-15% were women. And then I would look around and 90% were white. And that proportion, given North Carolina's demographics, was very skewed. And they weren't very successful in outreaching, no matter how many times they would start a minority council or a minority outreach. They fell flat because while you reach out to them, the experience they would get, the lack of belonging and inclusion for those groups that came in, quickly isolated them and quickly had them not being in attendance and not participating in an entrepreneurship group. And so we're looking for metrics beyond the popular ones. Our return on investment, our legal costs for compliance, the risks. The true metric is how sustainable is your business? How hard is it to get new customers or recruit and retain the employees that you want that have the skill sets and the capabilities that are there? And so when we're looking at diversity and inclusion, that equity, that opportunity to advance equally, then we need to look at multiple dimensions across a broad range of perspectives to find the best aspect of ourselves. Because diversity is, and inclusion is supposed to have a what they call a triple bottom line. And so it comes down to profits, yes, but it comes down to how we are as a member of the community, of how our business and our lives, our interactions impact the people, the stakeholders of our business, of our community, of the world. And so we're looking at everything from a planetary perspective, and we want to be good citizens within the global perspective. And so we're looking for best practices for our organizations. And how does diversity and inclusion, equity and belonging roll out in our particular business, in our business community, in those organizations, entrepreneurship groups? We're looking for everybody not to be isolated and separate into little communities based on race or based on gender. We're only successful to our maximum effect when we are all able to come together and interact and to come together and team up and collaborate and have informed perspectives, different perspectives. And so when we look at diversity management, diversity provides a definition of diversity management as the strategy of using best practices with proven results to find and create a diverse and inclusive workplace. And to paraphrase the rest of it, it's to successfully link diversity progress directly to our business results. And so how do we measure that? Well, we measure it in multiple ways, and really beyond the scope of today's program, and we'll dig into it in details in the future, but we want to create our businesses as a role model. We want to do the best, most effective things in our business, and we want to be able to see if they're working. So it's not purely a bottom line number. It's not purely about profitability, but it's about understanding that sustainable businesses will be businesses that understand their customers and their potential customers the best, that provide that value. And the way we can best understand a broader audience for our products and our services is by having a diverse workforce, a diverse set of advisors, our boards of directors, our leadership of our organizations, our vendors, our advertising, businesses that are successful either through direct employment or through contracts with service providers that reflect the markets they want to serve are going to have more effective messaging. If you go out to software as a service type things that provide images, photos, video, all those kind of aspects that go into our advertising or go on our websites, you can see a shift over the past 20 years that reflects the diversity that has been in the shift in populations, and where you might only have seen white males pictured in three-piece business suits in the 80s in photos, you start seeing more mix of genders, and then a mix of ethnicities and races, and then a mix to include physical disabilities in the images, as well as all the other factors. And so we are becoming more aware that what are the content of our websites, the covers of our books, the images we use when publishing an article need to reflect the people we want to connect with, because those give us cues in our visual perception that says, hey, I look like someone in that picture. And so that's me. And we start feeling a me, a we, an us, versus, okay, that's for them and I'm not in that picture. So in our diversity toolbox, we need a lot of different tools, because each tool is going to have a different effect. It's like looking into any toolbox. There's something, a saying to the effect of, if you're a hammer, everything's a nail. And so if we have a hammer as the only thing in our diversity toolbox, then everything is going to be treated as a nail. And we need a full scope of tools in our toolboxes. We need to be able to measure and evaluate and have tools for that. We need to be able to identify stakeholders and have models and ability to reach out to a broader, more diverse range of stakeholders. We need to be able to assess our cultures. We need to be able to go through it and review our policies, not in one time, but on a recurring basis to make sure that they are evolving to reward and encourage the behaviors of diversity and inclusion in our organizations. There's just so much that is there that we become used to. It's customary. And I don't know how many businesses in my corporate life and then as a consultant for the past 20 years, I have seen that the businesses have become constrained by self-imposed restrictions, self-imposed bottlenecks that got down to their policies and procedures, to what the organization was allowed to do and what not to do. And so the Society for Diversity actually has a information on the diversity toolbox. Some of the things that are in it include regulations and laws, but it's also research and data. It's about needs analysis and processes for onboarding and recruiting. It's about supplier diversity programs, and there's so many things out there on the Society for Diversity in their toolbox and their writings about this. And so self-awareness of ourselves as business owners, as business leaders, as managers, and self-awareness as to the organization we have created. 2021 is a great year for looking at our organizations and looking at our policies, our procedures, the written ones and the unwritten ones, because the unwritten ones can actually bite us harder than even the written ones. The ones that we want to be aware in our businesses about the policies, the procedures, the way we do business, the way we conduct ourselves, written or unwritten, and the impact of that and how that translates into diversity and inclusion. So policies and procedures have a role in promoting equity in our organizations. They help to ensure equal treatment. They only ensure that when we actually use them, when we actually enforce them. And so if we want positive results from our policies and procedures, it's not enough to just write them and have them on paper. We have to live them. We have to reward the behavior for that. We have to be sure that we are not tolerant and acceptance of people breaching the policies and procedures that we have put in place to ensure equity in the workplace. And equity in the workplace, again, is everyone having the opportunity to advance based on merit, based on their contribution. And so we have to look to best practices in our organizations in the context of diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging. And understand that we have to have metrics and measurements, and we have to take those measurements and compare them to our metrics to ensure that we are making progress and where we're falling on the spectrum of results. We want transparency in our organizations for how effective we are at being DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and how we're performing on that. Because transparency, where there is light, no darkness can be, right? So having light and shining it on the organization means that we're asking questions and we're aware and we're assessing. It's not on paper and stuck in a drawer or on the shelf. We need to live and breathe what we are driving to have as a result and an outcome. We may have set work hours. Let's say our business hours are published as 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Are our workers actually there? Do they come in at 9:05? The other day I was trying to contact my bank and make an appointment to go in for it. The first four branches I called, I got a message saying, call during our regular business hours, 9 to 6. Well, by the time I got to the fifth branch, it was almost 9:30, and that one did answer. But the others, it was normal business hours. Now, we are living in the age of COVID, and we're going to acknowledge that. However, I happen to know that that bank's policy was, if a branch was down because of COVID exposure or whatever, the message needed to be changed to say, we're sorry, this branch is not available at this time due to COVID exposures. You can check our other branches that are open, and they are, or call this number to find, and you know, our normal business hours will resume on such and such date. We apologize for the inconvenience, something to that effect. That wasn't happening. And so it gets back to the organization's expectation of behavior versus the execution by the management of each branch. And so, you know, in bringing that up to the bank, when I finally did get to have the meeting with one at one of the banks, the disparity in how each branch was. One branch you can walk in, the other branch you had to have somebody come call in, somebody comes to the door and locks it and escorts you in. So it's those discrepancies between how we say we're going to behave and the expectation of that we set and how we actually execute and how our organizations deliver, it's going to come into the success and sustainability of our organization's D&I efforts. And so there are a lot of things that go in our organizations that group pressures, group expectation, peer pressure to conform with the group and the expectation comes into play. So let's say we're in the organization and we have a group of employees, and I'll take this out of one of my, towards the end of my corporate career where I started my business, I worked as one of two females in a department of 12 or 14 people. And my boss was a female and me. So we were the two women. The expectation and agreement we had was, as women, we were always going to support each other as long as we were doing the right things. And yet, when the dynamics in the males in the department began talking about going to strip clubs and all the things that were associated with that and other things that created a hostile work environment in the organization for any woman, not just in the department, but in the area in which we were all operating with other departments, the expectation as management was that we should have reacted to that. We should take it to HR. The appropriate action should be taken. However, being two women out of ultimately 40 or 50 in that part of the physical location of the organization, when you take it to HR, HR goes, oh, that's just boys being boys. Now, mind you, yes, this is 20 years ago. But even 20 years ago, that was an unacceptable behavior from an all-male HR workforce. And so why did they have that behavior? They were also engaging in the behavior after hours at the strip clubs. They were in the fraternity, I guess is one way to convey it, of the men in that organization. And no one wanted to be seen as outside that fraternity. Again, just as a context, it truly wasn't a fraternity, but that was that camaraderie, that connectiveness, that's the guys against the girls, the men against the women type perspective. And then when you have to look at the organization's HR department that is not upholding the policies, the procedures, the laws, and the regulations, then you have a systemic issue of an organization that is incongruent with what the organization's stated practices were and expectations. And so in group dynamics, there is very likely to be a dynamic where it is difficult for one person to stand against a group. Now, in my experience, being an outside female finance board member for different organizations, as an independent board member, as someone that's outside the organization, and frequently as the only woman board member, and frequently the only person with a finance and compliance credential on the board, you're set up as the outsider in that dynamic anyway. So if you, for years, if you looked at a board, the most likely whistleblower on the board would be an independent female board of directors member that would be disclosing to a regulatory agency, because there was not that group dynamic to them being included and being reluctant to speak against the group because they were not part of the group. They truly were an outsider to the group. So when we're looking at our organizations, when we're defining them and us in the organizations, whether that is management against the worker, whether that is a ethnic group, a minority group, a male versus female dynamic, whatever our organization is perpetuating or allowing to be perpetuated, we as the business owner need to be aware of that. We need to be seeking it out. We need to be identifying it, because that creates a great deal of risk for our organization and sets us up for failure in our organization, not just in our D&I efforts, but in our ability to grow and sustain a successful organization, because the cost of being in business goes up the more disconnected, the more that our organization lacks a dynamic of us in the organization. So again, in leading D&I efforts, we as the business owners, as the culture setters, as the person that's stamping the values on the organization, at least initially, and then as we guide the organization with our leadership style, we need to look and examine what it is we truly reward versus what we say we reward. Having a conversation with some clients today about organizational goals and the employees not having buy-in into those goals, and it's like, do they not have buy-in because they haven't helped inform those decisions, or is it they are not equipped or aligned in their performance metrics and how they are being measured and how their job is described to support those metrics? Do they not share the organization's values? Are we not taking into consideration as the business owners a perspective that is beyond that of ourselves, that may make our metrics, may make our values, may make our performance stronger, because our employees, part of our team, may have a different view of our organization and how our customers want to be treated and what products and services that the customer is looking for in our prospects. And so the difference that we have to get down to is, we want to be leaders in our organization. We want people to follow us as an authentic leader, being fully who we are with warts and all, and see us constantly striving to learn more, to be more, to grow, to get out of our comfort zones, to encourage other people to do that. So we want to lead people. We don't want to manage people from the perspective that we should be managing processes and products. But we want our organizations to be self-actualized, to our team to do the right things because they understand why they need to be done. We want to focus on the development of our people and their skill sets and encouraging them to be their full and authentic selves. We want to focus on the ideas, their skill sets that they're bringing to communication, to motivation, to building a team that values their input and their perspectives. When we think about managing our organizations, that's a form of formal authority, and we have that tendency to dictate. And yes, there will be some things we do dictate. We will dictate that you follow the law. We will dictate conduct in the office place as to what's appropriate or not. We will dictate that we will not tolerate sexual harassment, hostile workplaces, and those types of unacceptable behavior in any organization. And so what we're seeking with our organization is to have a 360 perspective of input, but yet acknowledging that as business owners, as the decision makers, we will have the ultimate decision on the direction the organization takes and often how it gets there. And so we're focused on ideas. We're focused on seeking change. We want to be striving to learn, to grow, to do things differently that's going to impact the day-to-day, because our vision is about the big picture. And then we're going to challenge our organization and task them with translating the strategy into executables, into sub-goals, and goals and sub-goals, to tasks that are on a mile, at mile markers, to see how we measure in the metrics. And so we have a vision, and we expect as leaders to have, and for the leaders throughout our organization to be adaptive, to be responsive to change, and to be willing to embrace change and even encourage change. And so the way we've always done it is not the way we want to always do it going forward. And so we're seeking a dynamic, growing, thriving, evolving organization that evolves consciously, that incorporates the perspectives of our team into the DNA of our organization. So if we want to achieve cultural competence, with leadership, with management skills, combining our adaptive skills and our technical skills to build the best businesses that we can build. And we're going to talk about more about that and more about diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging in our upcoming episodes. And this year is going to be a journey of learning about how diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging builds our businesses and makes them better, makes them more sustainable, makes them stronger. It makes them have an impact on our lives, our employees and stakeholders' lives, our communities, and the world as a whole. And so until next time, everyone, stay focused, on the important things, and stay safe. You've been listening to Focus on Business on WCOM, FM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro 103.5 on the dial